I'm going to take you guys to the other side of the world. I work at Rothamsted Research, which is in the UK. And this is a collaboration with Guy Kirk, who's a cell physicist, also at Cranfield University in the UK. So things I'm going to start talking about is more in the English landscape than the... Sure. Is this clear? Okay. One of the things that our group is very interested in and we're doing some research with is to couple geostatistical techniques and variation in the landscape with soil process models. And what I wanted to talk about today is in essence a tool that we developed to determine effective linearity in soil process models. So the problem that we face very often in terrestrial and particularly soil process models is that they are often developed at a scale that is different, finer, than that at which the output is needed and the inputs are available. And I can describe that better with this this slide here. In essence, this is a landscape in the UK. Here's Luton. London is down below here. Our institute sits right here. And you're looking at a landscape that has chalk sitting over Galt clay with a green sand ridge in here. Now, we may have, for a certain bit of the landscape, very sparse information. We may go to the soil survey and end up with a certain amount of information saying that this particular polygon here is Ashley series, and we know that it has a pH of 7.1. Our soil process model will have been developed at this very, very fine scale. So we have to disaggregate the information we obtain at this scale to be able to input it into our soil process model, and then the outputs from the soil process model have to be re-aggregated to obtain a soil model prediction at the polygon that we're actually interested in. If the process model is linear, this aggregation, deaggregation, disaggregation, aggregation step is fairly simple. It's just a matter of using the means. If it's nonlinear, you introduce a bias. So here I want to illustrate this bias that's introduced. If we consider increasing block diameters, so increasing areas over which we're aggregating, we use the same mean input, but as we aggregate over increasing blocks, we are sampling more of the spatial variability. So the spatial variability in our input parameter increases, therefore the variance of our input parameter increases. What we find is that in this case, the case study is the process we're looking at is ammonia volatilization. The response is ammonia volatilized. As we consider large block diameters, we increasingly get a far more biased output. This is the output we should be seeing. This is the bias that we introduce due to nonlinearity in between the input parameter and the model output. So the issues we deal with is, in essence, that different factors or processes might operate at different scales. The model might not describe a dominant process at a given scale of interest. And some processes described in the model might actually not be that interesting at the scale of interest. And the model, as I described before, might be nonlinear with respect to its inputs. And it's also unlikely that all the information needed will be available at the model scale. Now, that sets the scale for the stage for the entire overall project that we're kind of working on. Now I'm going to focus in on the model linearity and particularly aggregating to coarser scales from a model output. And we approached it from a somewhat stochastic statistical sense. In essence, we assume, and this is given that most soil processes are probably nonlinear. So really what we're interested in is not whether the process model is nonlinear or not, but whether for a given problem at a given scale, is this really something we have to be concerned with? In other words, is this nonlinear behavior practically important given all other sources of uncertainty in your model input parameters? And that's how we come with the concept of effective linearity. Effective linearity is, in essence, an approximate squared deviation of the model output from the best linear approximation over the entire model's parameter space. We obtain analytical variance from the data of the measured data on the model output. And the model is nonlinear if these deviations from a linear approximation are higher than what we obtain from the analytical variance of the model output. In this particular case we're dealing with, the case study we're dealing with is a model of ammonia volatilized from urea applied to soil. I work in a an agronomic institute, so it's mostly ag-type things. The variance associated with that is about 5%. So, as I mentioned before, it's an ammonia bloodlice. It's of interest in the UK because of the manure application and fertilizer application elsewhere. The model basic scale is about 50 millimeters. It's a cell about this size. And we want to make predictions of how much ammonia is volatilized over the landscape scale, so in excess of 2 kilometers, in between fields, the field scale, and the short range. We went into this landscape, we sampled at 144 sites, and currently we've already got the data from Cranfield. So this gives you an idea of the sampling procedure. This is Luton, up here is Cranfield. This here is the chalk, this is in essence soil parent material map. This is aggregating from the soil survey itself. What I want to point out is the nested sampling we approached. This nested sampling allows us to obtain variance components at different scales. With the variance components, we can obtain correlations, and through that, we have a feel for how different properties are correlated at different scales. Here's the model itself. This is a very simple description of it. It's a simple model. There's not much to it. The movement of urea in soil is diffusion. The sorption is described by Langer isotherm. The urease is by Michael Menten's kinetics. But all these elements introduce nonlinearity between the different parameters that we're measuring and the volatilization. The volatilization, everybody who knows more or less how nitrogen dynamics occur, is pretty much dominated by this component here. So pH plays a very, very important role in predicting how much ammonia is going to volatilize at a certain point in time. So here we have the model response or output for three different inputs: pH, bulk density, moisture content. And if we were to consider this this parameter space, then they all look pretty much nonlinear. So we would have problems aggregating. What we're advocating and the approach we're saying is that, well, if you have all of this parameter space, pH, for which the model is numerically stable, you're really not interested in that entire parameter space for any given problem. Your field will have a pH, your landscape will have a pH with a certain amount of variance. So we can, in essence, if we were to consider a soil series, and that soil series sits on the green sand, it has a mean pH of about 7, we can consider this bit of the model response and fit a linear approximation to that. And there's a good chance that we will find that this is a lot lower than the 5% cutoff that we said before. So where we'd consider the entire model nonlinear, as we go through the landscape, portions of it would be considered linear, portions of it would be considered nonlinear, depending on the problem that you're dealing with. We can generalize this, and I've done that in this slide. This is the deviations from the best linear approximation give over all mean pHs and all standard deviations. And in essence, you have a cutoff at a route there. So at this mean pH, an increasing spread standard deviations as you aggregate more of the landscape, there's a higher likelihood that your model becomes nonlinear. We developed this because models are complex, and I'm right now talking only about one input. Really, what you're interested in is in the entire model parameter space, which inputs are contributing to nonlinearity and which ones are not. Because those that are contributing to nonlinearity, you have to sample for more densely, or you have to adapt the model for. Those for which the model is not linear, you can aggregate, put in a mean value, and don't worry about anymore. So we have deviations from linearity, we have overall deviations from linearity, and we can also assess the individual contribution from each input parameter to the model nonlinear behavior, which is what I have on this axis. And here we have the same slide I showed before, the bias introduced by increasing variance. And we see that pH really is the one that's introducing most of the nonlinear behavior, whereas bulk density and moisture content are not. And that you see that also in terms of this this axis here. The pH is the one that has the highest deviation from nonlinearity. 5 is the cutoff value, whereas bulk density never exceeds 5. So you can just use a mean level of bulk or mean value for bulk density in this particular model. And moisture content, same thing. It never exceeds 5. So this is a handy tool to kind of figure out what parameter you need to focus on to deal with the nonlinear behavior of your model. Now, pH is critical in the model. So now what? Okay, so I've concluded that the model is nonlinear. What do I do now? What we're thinking of doing and the way we think of approaching it is through this nested analysis, we can obtain scale-dependent correlations between the model predictions and the model observations, model predictions, and input parameters. And we can start simplifying the model as a modular approach, and it might be that we have to use some form of functional model or simplified model at very coarse scales due to the bias introduced by nonlinearity. I want to finish with this slide. This is basically the scale-dependent correlations that I can obtain from that sampling scheme, whereby I have a nested analysis. And in essence, you obtain correlations, correlation coefficients, at each scale, 2 meters, 50 meters, 500 meters, and 2 kilometers. And it gives me an idea that at this very coarse scale, pH, for example, is not that correlated with urease activity, or it's correlated with bulk density. But as you go down in, at the very fine scale, there's no correlation between the urease activity and bulk density. I can use this to identify which components in my modular approach I need to focus on and which ones I can leave out. With that, I'd like to summarize. In many practical applications of soil process models, aggregation is necessary. Where the soil process model is nonlinear, this aggregation is not a trivial problem. Therefore, it's useful to determine the effective linearity of the model under consideration and the problem and inputs under consideration. And this allows us to identify which model can be applied at what scales and which inputs need to be aggregated or disaggregated. Thank you very much.